Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
Hello, another week, another Offside Rule podcast where we discuss three standout matches from the weekend. Plus, this week, we have US journalist and play-by-play commentator Sarah Ash on to discuss the new USL Super League, which launches in the States later this year. More on that later. Over to Tash as well at the end of the show for her weekly scouting report, and I have no idea this week. Don't even ask me. I'm not even going to speak to you about it, Tash. We'll get to it at the end. But you're in the Isle of Man at the moment. What are you up to?
Yeah, so it's the Isle of Man Women's Day tomorrow with their association. So they've invited me out as a guest, and I'm going to be meeting lots of young girls playing football tomorrow. So I thought I'd come out a day early so I could explore the island. So really excited, already got my coffee shop to go and visit. The views out of the windows here today, you can see the mountains, you can see the water. It really does look a stunning place. So very excited.
And what's the state of football like over there? Because you think of Isle of Man and you think of motorsport, don't you, straight away?
Yeah, absolutely. They were actually saying that in June that's going to be happening. The guy that I'm staying with at his Airbnb, he's already invited me out to come and watch that.
But you've got to go and do that, Tash.
Yes.
Oh, my 100%. Word.
100%. Yes. The football here, he said it's tough, you know, but there are lots of girls playing. I saw even yesterday when I first arrived, he took me to go and see his daughter's team play. But it is a small island. I think there's only a population of 68,000 in total. So it's something that is growing. But I think hopefully bring the likes of myself over here to shine a light on the women's football and just sport in general over here will help. And a really cool story that I have to tell you is that my favourite PE teacher from when I was younger in secondary school, John King Reid, I always remember he was from the Isle of Man. And I said to Barry, the guy that I'm staying with, oh, yeah, my favourite PE teacher, John King Reid, he used to be from here. And he said, John King Reid? I said, yeah. And he said, he's back here in the Isle of Man. He's coming on Wednesday with his daughter. So I'm going to have a reunion with my favourite PE teacher as well.
Oh, well, I have a PE teacher story for you as well. I took my favourite PE teacher from secondary school. She got me playing football, but I arrived at it really late. We were about 15, 16 when I first kicked a ball. But she played for Wolverhampton Wanderers Women. And she was very much driving us all having the opportunity to play. And yeah, I loved her. And we've stayed in touch ever since I finished school. And so when the Lionesses won the Euros and they announced that they were playing the USA in a friendly and all the Lionesses were getting all of those legendary caps, I was able to take her along thanks to the FA. Kelly Simmons helped sort me out. And yeah, we went in the box and watched them. And she also went in the Legends Lounge afterwards and knew a few people.
That's so cool.
From the other generations. And it was so, so cool.
I love how you've already thrown in within a minute of the pod, Wolves, because you're just trying to straight away dig at me that you beat my feds team. I just knew just subtly throw it in there, Linz.
3-0, Tash, you owe me a coffee. I hate to point it out.
I'll
have it for the TT, if you like, on the Isle of Man.
Oh, brilliant.
But we must stress that this isn't part of your scouting report. I am sending you far and wide, and you are putting calls in all over the countries.
Barry's already given me a six-year-old to look out for. I've got her name, so I'm going to be watching her tomorrow and potentially 10 years' time. We could have found a gem.
Okay, well, lock that one down. In the meantime, though, you have gone abroad for one of your matches, one of your standout matches from the weekend. We will end with that one, but just give us the country that you've gone to, because I couldn't find out much about this match at all.
Yeah, so Portugal. You know, I really love looking at all the different leagues, especially the leagues that I haven't played in, which isn't many. And obviously being quite close to Benfica, having potentially, I was thinking of going there a couple of years ago. I really now keep an eye on the Portuguese league. So yeah, that's the league I'm bringing you this week.
Is it, this is what you could have done? This is what you nearly did?
Yeah. When I see Benfica at the top every year winning trophies, yeah, it would have been nice, but hey ho.
I can't imagine that you were involved in that many 10 goal, I'd say thriller, but I don't think it was a thriller in the end. It was always in Brighton's hands, this game, even though at one point it did go back to 4-3. But Bristol at Ashton Gate hosting Brighton, relegation battle, really, it was being dubbed at in the WSL. At 7-3 in the end, Brighton ran out winners. You mustn't have been involved in that many 10-goal games, Tash.
No, thank God. Yeah, I mean, we've won a few convincingly, maybe a little 4-0s or 5-0s, but that's tough. That's a tough one to take if you're a Bristol City player. But if you're a Brighton player, you know, you're enjoying yourself. 7 goals, you know, you're amongst the goals. I'm sure they're the type of games you want to be playing in. And when you look at this scoreline, Lindsay, it's not great for the league, let's be honest. You don't want to kind of see those big scorelines. For the neutral, I think it's great. You know, as someone myself, a striker, I love seeing goals. So watching the game, you know, seeing 10 goals go in. But when you look at the way the game went, like you said, Brighton were very comfortable. Bristol, like they always do, they haven't had an issue scoring goals this year. They've been scoring goals and they've got fight. But the massive problem for them, Lindsay, this season is the conceding goals.
Defensively, they were brutal.
Honestly, yeah. I think they've conceded, I think it was 45 goals in 15 games, Lindsay. You know, they've got the worst home and away form in the league. So there's no coincidence why they are where they are. And it sounds ruthless to say, but they're 6 points behind West Ham now. And in my opinion, that's just too much. And their run up now to the end of season, I need to read this out. So they've got United, Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool, City, Chelsea, and then Everton. So really, if you're looking at that list, Everton are probably the only team that you're maybe thinking they could pick up some points. So it's a struggle. But I do need to finish on a positive note. And you know me, Strikers Union, I need to talk about these two strikers. So Testrup and Turland, I have to give them a shout out, because someone that's played for Liverpool and Everton when we were fighting for trophies, it's fun. It's easy to score goals. When I signed for Reading, it's a lot tougher. You know, so I think when I look at Turland, 9 goals, Testrup 9 goals, Turland 11 goals in teams that are struggling down the bottom of the table. Lauren James and Bunny Shaw are the only players that have scored more goals than them, and they're obviously in the top teams. And I think what actually kind of impresses me even more, especially with Testrup rather than Turland, because Turland's form, she's always been a goal scorer. She's always had a knack for scoring goals. When you look at her stats, even before she signed for Brighton, she scored goals. Testrup, though, before she signed for Bristol City, 0 goals in 10 for West Ham, 0 goals in 9 for PSV, and then only 1 goal the season before for PSV in 20. So before signing for Bristol, 1 goal in 39 games, and now she's scored 9 in 15. So whatever Bristol City have done with her and have been working with her, and whether they just saw her and knew her style would suit their kind of play, fair play, because that's impressive to turn that kind of goal scoring form around.
Good scouting from them. But you do think that this is a sign of the times, you know, teams coming up from the Championship. There's going to be this gulf, I think, especially when you consider that all of the other teams, apart from Bristol in the WSL, are attached to a men's side. They've got Premier League backing. And you look at Bristol and going into this game, I know that after this result, Brighton leapfrogged West Ham. But going into this match, they were side by side in the table, yet the gulf was huge in terms of class. And And you do wonder whether anyone's going to be able to bridge that gap. You know, if Crystal Palace come up or Sunderland come up from, or Southampton from the Championship this year, they're all vying for it, aren't they? I mean, you can't rule out Charlton either, and I'll bring that up in my match. But I do think that getting to stay in the WSL is becoming a harder and harder task.
Yeah, it is. You're right. And if you look at Bristol City, I think the men's team are 13th in the Championship. And you only have to look at the likes of Reading and the effect that that had when they ended up getting relegated. And the stats now, I think what I know we're going to probably talk more about this, but what was it? $500,000 for a transfer fee for Ramirez to Chelsea. This is just transfer fees. That's probably more than what Bristol City have spent on their whole squad.
On their entire squad.
So, and that's a transfer fee. So I just think it is. It's getting tougher and tougher. And you can't fault Bristol because every game you can see they're giving everything. They're fighting. But probably recruitment-wise, they probably didn't strengthen enough, let's be honest. But I think you're going to find it really hard to bring in those top players when financially you haven't got the money. And when you know you're going to be down the bottom fighting, it's not really an attractive pool, to be honest, to go to a team where you know you're going to be fighting for relegation every season. So it is, it's tough.
With those fixtures you mentioned as well, so many will be writing Bristol off now. I think they saw this game as a must win. You needed those 3 points. And again, if you could follow that up with a victory, maybe against Everton, 6 points is a lot in this league, but they haven't got anything out of this game now. So I think many people will be thinking Bristol are cut adrift. They're 5 points adrift of West Ham. So they're 5 points from safety at the moment. But we must switch this round as well to Brighton. I'm surprised they are where they are. I think Brighton could be a team that really push for top six, top five at some point. You mentioned Elizabeth Turland, and I do think she's an incredible player. But even around a Pauline Bramer, Katie Robinson, I looked through this and I thought Mikey Harris has got a really, really good fabric of a team here to work with.
No, he has. And I watched them last week against Liverpool, and the football that they're playing, it's really impressive. I did say last week in the pod, a little bit naive at times, where they were really playing out in situations that I just thought, you're asking for trouble.
Has that been the main problem then, Tash, for you?
I would say so, yes. I would say if you kind of, it would be like a Burnley of the men's Premier League.
Which we're watching, at the moment.
Playing that really nice style of football. But at the end of the day, sometimes you have to adapt to who you're playing to. You know, when I was watching them against Liverpool, it was so obvious that Liverpool's were high pressing, that a goal was going to come from this. Just miss the press out. Go long for a little bit. You've got the pace of your Katie Robertsons. You know, you've got your Turland, who's in good goal scoring form. But no, they consistently persisted in playing out. Then the keeper played it straight to Kerry Holland. 1-0, they lose 3 points. So I think it's a case of they've got the squad, they've got the foundation. They are building. Potentially next year now is the year that they look to really kick on again. But yeah, set, I think, up ninth in the league, 14 points. That's poor for them, really, with the squad that they've got there.
Coming on to the Championship game that I've picked out, Sunderland 1, Southampton 0. And it does seem to me, whether you're mid to low WSL or you're top of the Championship, more effort, I think, is needed to just shore up defence. I think defenders and goalkeepers are probably your prize assets, because there hasn't really been a problem in attack for these sides. They've been scoring goals, and there seems to be a way that attackers find a way in these leagues anyway. Like you just pointed out, right at the bottom of WSL, players are still scoring. But the key could be how well you get a defence organised, couldn't it? So let's bring up this game, because it was only a narrow victory for Sunderland, and it doesn't tell the whole story. I don't know how much you managed to catch up on this.
Oh, I watched it, yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was Southampton, Southampton, Southampton for the majority of this game. They came out the blocks quickly. I lost count of chances. There was Wilkinson had a chance. Morris, who was having a first start after injury. Pike, she dragged that shot
1v1.
Wide, didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she had another one in the second half where she was very close as well. So I really felt that the scoreline here didn't tell the whole story of the game. I think Southampton will be really disappointed. But clinically, it was a goalkeeper error that led to the goal, I think. You know, if you look at the poor clearance, straight to Sunderland, and then on that attack, and of course they still had a lot to do, but McAteer managing to finish off the move. It did come against the run of play. And yeah, I think you look at the table now, it's so, so close. But this was a huge one because Sunderland top of the championship as it stands and Southampton in third. Southampton could have really closed that gap and made it a lot tighter towards the top. Because you've got to consider in second place a Crystal Palace and they have two games in hand over Sunderland. So just to recap that, Sunderland are top 34 points now after that victory over Southampton. Palace with the two games in hand on Sunderland are on 30. So if they win those two games in hand, they'd go above them. And then you've got Saints and Charlton both on 30 points in third and fourth. It's just goal difference, which Saints are winning on. But it's very, very tight. I mean, if you were to call this, do you think it's between Sunderland and Palace, or after seeing what Southampton did in parts in this game, you think they're still in it?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think they're all still in it. Even down to the likes of Birmingham, you know, I think they've got such a strong squad. I really do. So it's fascinating when you look at the table there and you see them taking points off of each other. But I also have to give, because of the Welsh, because of Becky, my partner, Mary McAteer, I have to give her a shout out. Becky has been raving about this player for the last 2 years. She's actually been probably one of the big reasons why she's broke now into the Welsh senior team, because Becky actually scouted her and said, you need to give this girl a go. So it's really nice to see her now actually getting minutes, you know, scoring. She's been broken into the Welsh national team and has got some game time. So it was nice to see her score. It was a really well-taken
goal
as well. It was a great strike.
I might have missed the name.
Mary McAteer.
Oh, McAteer, yeah, who scored the goal, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but no, I mean, look, it's open there for everyone. It really is. From Sunderland, in my opinion, down to Birmingham, I think all five of those teams have strong enough squads to compete to go up there. But credit to Sunderland, you know, obviously luck was with them. Yes, the other day against Southampton for sure, but massive 3 points and sitting now, you know, 4 points clear at the top of the league. And we were obviously speaking about that Sunderland team, you know, that had maybe disappeared, now top of the championship potentially. Could be back in the WSL.
Oh, they deserve to be back in the big time at some point. They do.
Might be able to poach all their players that we were saying. Have a reunion again.
I think it's going to be very tight right down to the wire in the championship as to who comes up. Must stand corrected as well. Last week, I chose a game from the Southern Premier. So we have the Northern Premier, Southern Premier. And it was pointed out, I didn't realise this, but we're learning as we go as well, Tash, as we try to open up to the rest of the pyramid. But the playoff match is no more. Nick from Cambridge got in touch and said it's the first year that they're not doing the Northern Premier versus the Southern Premier to get into the Women's Championship. So I'm glad that move's happened, but I also
Absolutely.
Wanted to make sure we correct that so people don't go around thinking that's happening again after listening to our show.
I think that's a positive thing, positive move.
Right, then embrace us with your match from Portugal. It doesn't include Benfica, even though that's the side that you nearly joined.
Yeah, Benfica, look, they win. They win every week. It's not boring, but they win the league every year. So, and look, they're by far the best team in the Portuguese league. However, second v third, Sporting versus Braga. I wanted to have a look at this game because fighting for Champions League, before the game, I think there was only a point in it. But Sporting won 3-1. But I need to tell the story of the game because it went 1-0 to Braga after 4 minutes. Good start, strong start. Cajera scored. Then it was 1-1, Martins for Sporting. So half-time, 1-1, tight game. 66 minutes, Rodriguez gets a red card for Braga.
Oh,
so now they're down to 10 men.
Yeah.
And it just kills the game because then Sporting go on to score two more goals, Capeta and Bravo, 18-year-old midfield player, could potentially be one for our little ones to watch. So Sporting ended up winning 3-1. So now there's a 2 points difference now. They've got that little gap. They move 5 points clear now, of Braga. Benfica are already 7 points clear. So in my opinion, I think that really was that Champions League spot secured for Sporting. But the league over there now, it really is growing and growing. I think the way that Benfica now are playing in Champions League, the way they've progressed so well in Champions League last season and the season before, is shining a light on the Portuguese league. And they've got some wonderful players over there. And when I was actually talking to their president to sign for Benfica, they showed me around the stadium and the setup there is magnificent. It really is. So I think within the next couple of years, you'll see more players looking to go over and play in Portugal. And I mean, what a lifestyle, what an opportunity to go and play over there. So I think we'll be hearing more about La Liga BPI, which is what the league's called over there.
And that has a knock-on effect as well for the national team, because we've seen Portugal in the last few major tournaments. And I think they underwhelmed a little, but you can see the talent that they've got. They just needed, it felt like they needed more guidance, actually, that team. And I also think that Portuguese sides, falsely sometimes, but it can be seen that you can out-muscle them on the ball a little bit. So, yeah, I think it would be good for that league to grow and get more competition, because it might benefit the national team as well.
Definitely.
We will leave that there. Those are our three standout games from the weekend. Bristol 3, Brighton 7 in the WSL, Sunderland 1, Southampton 0 in the Championship, and Sporting 3, Braga 1 over in Portugal.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
In the spotlight this week, we're shining a light on the USL Super League. And some of you might be listening thinking, what? I think this has caught a lot of people out, but there is going to be a brand new professional league over in America. It will sit alongside the NWSL, split across the calendar year. Here to join me and to talk more about that is US journalist Sarah Ash. For anyone who's been under a rock, although I don't think it's their fault, I don't think there's been that much publicisation around this, but a brand new league is launching. Now, over in the States, the important thing to note here is the Division One league status. And so just explain to us what that means, that there will be two existing leagues within a calendar year, basically.
So the Division One league status just really means that this is going to be a professional league and a fully professional league. So essentially, think about the NWSL. It will be equivalent to the NWSL. The calendar for the USL Super League, however, will be a little different. They don't really like to say that they're mirroring the European calendar. They like to say that they align with the international calendar. So they will kick off the USL Super League in August. They'll play through the fall and then they'll break for the snowy months, if you will. And then they'll pick back up in the spring and then they will break for the summer. And they've put out a lot saying that they think this is not only good for players, but mainly it's good to mirror the international calendar because all of the wear and tear that we've seen on players so far going in and out of country, and especially when you look at the NWSL, I mean, it runs over the summer. These players last summer were going from club into the World Cup and immediately jumping back right into the middle of the season. So they think that with this calendar, it hopefully will make life a little bit easier for the players.
So if any country was going to launch two professional leagues, it was going to be the US. You are way ahead in terms of where you're at with women's soccer. I know the NWSL is celebrating a 12th anniversary year. I know there were a couple of incarnations prior to that that failed, but really it's been quite steady now for 12 seasons in 2024. So what has the reaction been like over there to having two leagues? I mean, it's a huge country. I'm sure there's plenty of players and coaches and things like that available, but is there some competition for viewership?
That's a great question. And honestly, I think when the news broke of the Super League about a year ago and that they were going to create this thing called the Super League that lives under the USL and that it would be Division One status, mainly, if it wasn't positive feedback, what people were saying were that they were concerned that this was going to draw viewership away from the NWSL, that this was going to draw fans who are going to NWSL games away. And with a league that's still developing, I mean, you mentioned how long the NWSL has been around, but it really is still in a developmental state. There are only 14 teams right now. And for a US league, that's really not a lot for how big this country is. A lot of the criticism was that people thought that this might take away from the NWSL. And I actually think quite differently, actually. On the contrary, what this will do is provide a lot more space for development of the full pipeline in this country. And I think that looks a lot of different ways. First of all, of course, on the field. We'll start with the fact that the NWSL, as we mentioned, it's only 14 teams. It's only in 14 markets. That leaves a ton of other markets that just simply don't have a professional women's soccer team. And they saw an opportunity growth and a gap, and they took it. And that's where they will be plugging in for the USL Super League. It's not to come into the exact same cities that the NWSL is in and completely rival those. It's a different calendar. It's different markets. And on top of that, as we talk about the development of the game in this country, the NWSL exists almost in a vacuum. It exists by itself. There's not really a system, a developmental system that goes along with it. And what the USL is trying to do is take that pipeline that they frankly already have built in this country and add that Division I league on top of it to just give more opportunities for women's soccer players in the United States. We have a massive collegiate system, one that I came through. There's 40,000, if not more, women's soccer collegiate athletes in this country. And if you don't get drafted by one of those 14 NWSL teams, you have to go overseas to play professionally. And what the USL Super League does is just open up opportunities for all of those players to develop at home in this country and keep developing the game domestically.
Tash, unfortunately, you couldn't join us for that chat because you were traveling to the Isle of Man at the time. But I know that you've listened to it all in full, and there will be an extended version of that interview released down the same podcast channel. So later on this week, you'll get to hear more about that league. We give you a taster in this main show. But just another breakdown here, Tash. So 8 teams are going to kick off this new league. And in 2025, more will be joining. I mean, what did you think about it all? And did you know as much about it? Because within the player network, I said, nothing. I find nothing. That incredible that there isn't as much press about it.
Yeah. I mean, you'd see a little inkling on the socials or something. But unless I've just been in my own little world recently, I heard nothing. But I think it is great. I really do. Having played over in America for 2 years for the Boston Breakers in the NWSL, I saw what it was like for the players that came through the college system and then ended up getting drafted to the Pro League, and how many people missed out. And the crazy thing that I didn't even realize, Lindsay, is when the players actually get drafted into the Pro Leagues, it doesn't actually guarantee them a contract. So when the girls were actually training with us for pre-season, they were actually on trial. So through the whole of college, you get selected, you're one of the, very few that get selected to play in the NWSL, but then you're almost on trial in pre-season to see whether or not actually the coaches want to keep you or not. So, I mean, what a ruthless, tough system to go through. And like I said, so much talent got wasted, really. And then, either had to try and go abroad or, try and find somewhere else to play. So I think it's brilliant because there's so much talent in America. And it just gives players more opportunity. I think it's fascinating. I wish I was 10 years younger, because how cool is that, that 8 teams, and then it's going to expand even more. And I think it's going to make USA even more dangerous, because I think then this is going to have a massive positive impact on the national team. And just for women's football in general, really, it gives players more opportunity as well from different countries, England, other countries, to go and play in America, because it was tough to play in America full stop, because you're only allowed 5 internationals per team. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard to actually get into the NWSL. So now with that expansion, more opportunity as well for players to travel and experience what it's like to play in America, because it was one of the best decisions I ever made. So really exciting.
You're right as well. It's such a huge country. It is the one that can handle having 2 professional leagues for sure. I did ask as well, Sarah, after our phone call about the most bizarre places that it's going to. And one of the places she said most unusual is probably Spokane, Washington, which is the smallest of places. And she said it'll be a really long trip, because even when you get to Washington, you've got so much further to go. And I mean, that's the story over in America anyway, doing all the travel. You'll know this. I think you're nearly there and there's another however many miles to go. But she was most excited, and I can imagine from a playing point of view, players will be, that Brooklyn are going to have a league. I mean, can you imagine playing in Brooklyn? Oh, what a life
that
would be.
I might have to come out of retirement.
Yes.
And then and then also the 5 teams in Florida. That is wild.
Yeah. So what do you think the knock-on effect is for Europe? I suppose that's the question we should end on, because she very diplomatically answered that. But I do think there is going to be some crossover, because we have been attracting, the WSL has been attracting the best players.
Yep, absolutely. I think they've responded. They've responded in a way that the NWSL was the best league in the world. Everyone wanted to go over there and play. Bend It Like Beckham, you know, all them, the movies. Mm. And then I feel like Europe kind of took over, in my opinion. I think now England, people want to come and play in England, in our league. And USA don't like that. They want to be the best. You know, they don't like the limelight being elsewhere. So they've gone, right, okay, we need to try and make our league again, or our country, the one that people want to come and play in. And then you're seeing transfer fees of, what, $735,000 for... Rachel, is it Hundingaji, from Bay FC? You know, them kind of stats, it's going to catch players' eyes. You know, if you're hearing transfer fees like that, you're hearing big signings going to the NWSL, and now you're hearing that there's another league opening up in America. Look, money talks, you know, and that's the way it is now. It's becoming more like that in women's football. I say unfortunately, but that is the case. So you see now some of these players, your likes, so we were talking about Hegerberg, you know, being out of contract. These kind of big superstars that potentially have been at clubs for a long, long time might fancy something else, might fancy exploring elsewhere. So it wouldn't surprise me if you see, you know, some huge names now going back over to America. Your likes of your Lucy Bronzes, you know, these players that have won everything, done everything. You know, why not now go and try something else and be able to earn good money and live in amazing places and live an amazing lifestyle? So, yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, do watch this space, because we have it on good authority, don't we, that there's a couple of big names that are going to be announced before that league starts later this year. We'll leave that one there then, the USL Super League. Thank you to Sarah Ash for speaking to us.
The Offside Rule. Women's football unlocked.
Natasha, over to you then. You're going to do your talent scouting for us. I'm going to sit back. I have no idea where you're going. I've got no idea of the country. I've got no idea what position. I'm hoping it's not another midfielder.
Okay, well, it's not another midfield player, you'll be happy to know. However, I'm slowly getting to the defenders and goalies, but I haven't brought you one of those yet. It's just not in me, Linz. I'm sorry, but we've got Swedish. So, different nationality again for you. And my in-source, my kind of contact, because you know me, I love my contacts just like you do, Louise Fors. So, the ex-Y player for Liverpool, Swedish. Yeah. I was talking to her. I said, come on, give me some Swedish talent. So, we have got Rosa Kafaji. Okay, so she is a forward, striker, 20 years old, plays for Häcken in Sweden. Now, speaking to Lola, I've been watching a few highlights of her. Very strong character, good in the air, good in the box, really good in 1v1 situations. I'll build up a little bit about her. So she scored 12 goals so far this season for Häcken in 26 games, and she's got 3 assists. So definitely has an eye for goal. Just broke into the Swedish national team as well. So again, it's this one that we haven't heard of, but potentially now she's going to be on the scene. But the thing that I think really is quite cool is that recently she got her first senior goal for Sweden. But when Häcken beat Real Madrid away 1-0 in the Champions League, she scored the one goal. And when they beat Real Madrid at home 2-1, she scored. So she's obviously someone as well that scores in the big games when it matters. You know, so even at 20 years old, to be scoring against Real Madrid at home and away, you know, it's not like
she can handle the pressure.
Can handle the pressure. So I'm really excited. Rosa Kafaji, watch this space, a talented centre forward for Häcken, and potentially, you know, the English league. You know, when they see players doing well in Champions League, I'm sure one of those big clubs will be coming and snatching her up from Häcken in Sweden.
And if any of our listeners want to point Tash in the direction of any defenders or goalkeepers,
yes,
by
do.
All means, on social media, she's all over it. So do get in touch with Tash. She's all ears, aren't you, Tash?
Yeah. You should do it, Lynn. That's your kind of forte. You should bring the defenders and goalies.
I want to leave this one to you. I really do. It just amuses me. But I tell you what, I will. If I see any, I am going to point some in okay. your direction. We will have the mailbag this Friday as well. So this isn't the end for this week, although it is the end of this show. We will ask you, if you don't mind, to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. If you leave us 5 stars and leave a comment, it helps other people find the show. And we are starting to find week on week that more of you are discovering us. So thank you for anyone who's done that already. We are on social media, so at Offside Rule Pod on TikTok, Instagram, and on X, formerly known as Twitter. You can leave your comments there, get in touch with any observations, any queries, any questions. We can include those in the mailbag feature too. We'll be back on Friday with that, but for now, goodbye.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production. Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.